Thanks for everybody for showing up. Like she said, I'm going to be talking about how harvesting and fertilization treatments affect basically soil carbon and nitrogen stocks. And in this particular talk, I'm not going to be talking too much about the nitrogen aspect of it, although they're very similar with carbon changes. So just go ahead and ask me any questions at the end if you have any questions for that. But just want to acknowledge my advisor and some of the people that we work with. I'm going to be focusing on below ground carbon, but we have collaborators at Rice that are focusing on all the above ground components associated with these with this experiment. Also NSF, and I did my work at Kellogg Biological Station. So the motivation behind it is just, you know, up until the industrial age, we had a relative stable amount of greenhouse gases, and then as we got into the industrial age, we had an increase in greenhouse gases. And so being able to provide energy, food, and fuel for people have obviously caused an increase in this, and we want to know how we can mitigate that. So one option is to put some energy into biofuels. And so there's various types of feedstocks, and the main idea behind biofuels is we want to find something that's sustainable and creates a sort of biodiversity, but also has a renewable aspect to it. We also have to consider the carbon and nitrogen considerations that go into this, and we want to keep a neutral or even a positive carbon budget in the different biofuels that we work on. So, in particular, I'm working on switchgrass. It's a second-generation biofuel, so it affords the luxury of having this food versus fuel battle with corn and for ethanol and things like that. The plot here on your right has where switchgrass can grow in North America, and you can see from the bottom it has this complex rooting system, which improves nutrient use efficiency, water use efficiency, but as well can be looked at in terms of a form of carbon storage. So, as I was saying earlier, my actual project was done at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. This is in southwest Michigan. And the good thing about this place is the long-term ecological research site, so they have well-documented soil and plant use history throughout the last 100 years. So kind of getting on to what I did, if you look here, you have the biannual and annual, but I looked at two harvesting rates. So they harvested in July, and then they harvested two other plots in November, so another biannual in November and an annual. And then I kind of used an in-member approach for fertilizer applications. And what we were trying to understand was how do these affect things like soil carbon and nitrogen stocks on the total soil level, as well as root and free particulate organic matter in terms of how much we recovered, as well as carbon and nitrogen stocks that were calculated, and the biochemical composition. So soil core processing, they would harvest, they would go in and harvest, and we would come right in behind them and actually use a hydraulic core, go down to 60 centimeters, and take cores just randomly. And the way this experiment was set up was just a randomized block design for the actual fertilization, things like that. And so we split them up into the intervals that you see there to kind of get a depth-wise representation of the things that we were looking at in terms of soil carbon, root carbon, and things like that. And so I just put this up here. I don't want you to zone out too much, but it's just a sample matrix where I have my biannual November and biannual July. So those are actually on the same plot, harvest taken in July and then taken in November. And so we didn't get data for a middle fertilization for the biannual November, but you can see the fertilization rate in the soil depths, and I just wanted to get you an idea that we took 8 samples per treatment. Then I talked about FPOM, free particulate organic matter, and so what we did was we used a soil a density fractionation with sodium iodide, and if you look right up here, we have this is kind of what I consider the light fraction of the free particulate organic matter, and then this is our sodium iodide solution, and then the dense fraction. And this was kind of what was driving us. We were thinking that these management these agricultural management techniques are going to affect this free particular organic matter because it's more likely to turn over. It's lay biomaterial, it's usually plant residues, and as this is transformed in the soil, it eventually is going to move into this dense fraction that's mineral associated or aggregate protected. And so we really wanted to look at the management effects on that type of soil carbon as well. So this is just kind of a matrix representing the significant effects of the different treatments. So you have your fertilization, so the annual going from a zero to a high 196 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare fertilization had significant effects on soil carbon and nitrogen. And then in the biannual, so the November, had a significant effect. And also that dense fraction carbon, and that dense fraction carbon I'll get to a little later, but it's extremely important because it's considered to have more stable properties, which make it stick around in the soil a little bit longer. And then we had a couple of instances in harvesting. So big picture is the fertilization reduced soil carbon stocks. And so the yellow here is the unfertilized plot. And you can see that most of those soil carbon stocks, what drove that significance, occurred at depth. The green is the middle fertilization, and the blue is the high fertilization. And so the significant effects of fertilization on soil carbon stocks essentially occurred at depth. And then I have here this gray line is conventional corn grown on the same site right nearby. And so on another note, the idea of increasing soil carbon stocks with these bioenergy crops is well documented here. And then the mineral protected carbon stocks, so these dense fractions, these legacy carbons, well, I wouldn't go quite that far, but the idea that it's still occurring at depth. So something at depth is creating this change in carbon with fertilization. I also wanted to get into root and free particulate organic matter carbon just because it was something that we studied. And so between the annual and biannual, for root carbon, there was a 31% decrease in root carbon between fertilization rates of the 0 and 196 kilogram. And although that was a large decrease, it wasn't significant, just due to natural variability and things like that. And for free particulate organic matter, the harvest treatment, so the difference between, if the yellow is the unfertilized, between the annual and the biannual, there was actually a 31% decrease in free particulate organic matter carbon stocks, which did have a p-value of 0.06. So it could be significant just based on where you put those levels. So these are some of the other findings that we found. But root carbon and free particulate organic carbon, looking at this slide, if the kind of, I don't know what color that is, brown, is free particulate organic matter, and then you have right below that, that darker black is root carbon. They don't make up a big proportion of the soil carbon stocks. And so the red here is the dense fraction carbon, and you can see that this dense fraction is dominating the soil carbon pool. And so these changes in dense fraction are extremely important. And so we want to know what's causing these changes in the mineral protected carbon, carbon stocks. And so the idea behind soil carbon stabilization in order to improve greenhouse gas mitigation and things like that, you have your root and surface litter turns into free particulate organic matter, and then this free particulate organic matter is eventually changed into mineral protected or dense fraction through microbial processes. But what we find in terms of root carbon stocks, they don't show changes in soil carbon, and the free particulate organic matter changes in carbon stocks don't affect these dense fractions. So one way that we're trying to look at this is looking at the stability or the biochemical composition of these soil carbon stocks. So using ratios like lignin to nitrogen and alkyl to O-alkyl, the particular tool that I use is NMR, and NMR is essentially looking at the functional groups to determine stability. And so looking at things like alkyl to O-alkyl ratios here, along with just combustion analysis for total organic carbon and nitrogen, we can apply those into a mixing model to kind of get an idea of not only the ideas behind carbohydrates and lignins, but also what is the stability of this carbon, and is that what's affecting these dense fraction components? So for the free particulate organic matter, we found that fertilization increased decomposition of that free particulate organic matter, at least in the annual plots here on the left. On the biannual, there wasn't a significant change. And because it's such a small fraction of the soil carbon, we didn't run it below 15 centimeters, and I don't even know if I have the data yet for 5 to 15. But we do see that fertilization increased decomposition in annual plots. For root, we used the lignin to nitrogen stability ratio, and although we didn't find a major change between fertilization rates, we found that with the depth, these root lignin proxies show that there was increasing stability. So that's promising in terms of analyzing that data. So in summary, I just want to kind of go through that the soil carbon stocks were lower in the heavily fertilized treatments, but other than, like more importantly, the dense fraction of that mineral-associated carbon was also affected by these fertilization treatments. And all, the free particulate organic matter exhibited a greater extent of decomposition under heavy fertilized soils as well. So implications, in order to increase these carbon inputs in the soil, we have to estimate size and effect managements upon stable and label carbon pools to make this more relevant to soil carbon modeling. And we're still trying to understand the treatment effects on the composition of this mineral protected using NMR. We'll probably go back and look at that, and hope to inform future management practices. So with that, I'll take any questions. Yes, ma'am? It was just applied at the surface.
All of them?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is it necessary to grow at that time, or is it
just going? It's yeah, so this was a 3-year treatment, and we applied the fertilizer at the beginning of the growing season after the first year of establishment. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Any more questions? We have some time.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you think that the fact that there was so much change in the mineral associated organic matter sort of leads to a more dynamic model of mineral or carbon association?
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because I wasn't expecting this at all. I thought this was like the stable carbon that we wouldn't see any changes in. And so I do think there's some sort of dynamic change going on. If I had the opportunity to look into the chemical composition of that mineral organic, soil organic matter, then I think it would give us an idea of what part of that is actually changing and why it's changing. But yeah, I do agree with you. Yeah.
Thank you very much.